In the Niti Shastra it is said, better to have one moon than have millions of stars. Because one moon can illuminate this entire planet Earth at night. And even if you have millions of stars, but if it is Amavasya, you can't have any illumination. So I consider each one of you as that special moon amid so many millions of stars within the city of Nasik. Hare Krishna. Not to be used. No sound system. But this is a little distractive. So, today's topic, as you see over here on the screen, seminar on power of habits. All of you, do you consider that habits which we all have, mostly, you know, the bad ones, are very powerful? Do you all agree with this? That we need to do something about them? Many times we feel that whatever habit I have, because I like it, because I enjoy doing that particular activity, so therefore I don't need to do anything about it because then I will lose my enjoyment. I will lose all that pleasure which I get out of that particular habit which I engage in. So, let us see, first of all, what habits are. And all of us in this particular hall, we can now discern that the kind of habits I am engaged in or I am habituated to, what kind of a person I am, depending on the kind of habits I am into. And then, of course, we will be discussing on what are the causes because of which these habits become so powerful, and of course the steps to be taken to overcome these bad habits, these tendencies within us. So, first of all, what are habits? As herein, these two quotes you see, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence is not an act, but a habit. Habits are acts repeated over and again till it becomes our fixed way of thinking, evaluating and reacting to situations in life. We do things repeatedly. Like one time, you know, one visitor, you know, in a European country, he saw that two people, they were seen engaged in a very strange activity. What he saw was, these two people, what they were doing, one of them, he was digging with a shovel. You know, some kind of fawda. With a shovel, one person was digging, taking out the mud. And the other person was filling that particular dug part again. Now, when this visitor, he saw this, he was very much surprised that what is the point, you know, one person is digging out and the other person is filling it back. So, he thought that maybe, you know, they might have missed out something and they might be a little confused for some time. So, he observed it for some time and they continued for over an hour. So, he became very desperate to find out what is this all about. So, he went up to them and he inquired that, wait a minute, first you explain to me what's happening. One of you, you are taking out the mud, you are digging, and the other one is filling it back. And he said that, see, we are actually a team of three people. So, I dig and take out the mud. And the second one, he plants a tree. We have been asked by the government to plant tree across this road. So the second one plants the tree and the third one fills it with mud over the roots. So today the second one is on leave. But we, very dutifully, we are continuing our job. The second one who is supposed to plant the tree, he has taken some off, and therefore, but we have to religiously do our duty, because we are paid on daily wages. So therefore, I am doing my job of digging, he is doing his job filling it. This is actually what happens is, when we unconsciously do things, not knowing the purpose behind what we do, why we do, for whom we do. So therefore, when we are speaking of bad habits, many times bad habits do not have any set purpose behind it. Bad habits do not have any set rule that why one is doing, why one is habituated to a certain bad habit. So therefore, that repeated action, because it gives enjoyment, some kind of pleasure, titillation, one keeps on doing, and then what happens is, it turns into a habit. And therefore, the word habit, very interestingly, you know, the English language has designed this word habit in a very interesting way, because just like the nature of habit, it's very sticky. It just sticks on to you. It's very difficult to let it go, especially bad habits. So just the word itself, if you see, if you take out the H, what remains? A bit remains. You know, a bit remains still. Take out the H, still bit remains. Take out the B, still it remains. So, the word habit itself is designed in such a way that it's so sticky that something or the other remains, even though we try so much hard to take it out, to root it out. But at least today, we'll try that even this it should be out. And it should be replaced with something very much positive. So again, going back to the nature of habits. Herein, a very wonderful quote I came across about habits. That, let's go one by one. One by one. This particular quote, best servants but worst masters. Over here you see that whenever you have a servant who is very much submissive and whatever you tell does it, then that particular servant you are very fond of and you know you reward him aptly. But then if you have a master who is a tyrant, who is like always bossing you over, then that master always is not so much appreciated. Now habits, when they are under us, when we control the habits, then habits, they are the best servants. As servant, the habits are very helpful and very healthy. But when they take over as masters, when they become our masters, then they are very ruthless. Then they are very tyrant in nature. So therefore always, we have to understand the nature of habits is you give a little relaxation, a little room for any bad habit, and that bad habit will take over you and become your master. So first of all, never allow any of the bad habits to take over you or become your master. In fact, we should use them as submissive, subservient servants. And therefore, this is one of the natures of bad habits, that it is very addictive in nature. Now, this word addictive, you must have come across addiction. Just like somebody who is very much addicted to smoking or drinking. So, addictive in nature is such that even though a person might know with intelligence that this is wrong, but still because of the addiction, again is drifted towards that bad habit. Like, there was a thief once who was very much addicted to stealing. And I know some of my friends also from my school days that nothing they would get out of that stealing. You know, like standing at a ticket counter and, you know, the person at the ticket counter is not attentive. So just stole, you know, the rubber stamp or, you know, whatever, the stamp pad. And sometimes I would ask that, what would you do with this? He said that just the situation that that person is not paying attention, it instigates me to steal. This friend of mine would say. So he said that it's a kind of addiction within me that I don't know why I go ahead and my hands just, they want to steal something. So the story of a thief, that this thief who was so much addicted to stealing, one time he went to a sage and he told the sage that I am fed up with this addiction of stealing things, stealing someone else's property. Do something about this. So the sage, you know, started a seminar, Power of Habits. But, you know, nothing made sense to this thief, you know. So, the sage sent him to a holy place, you know, for Kumbh Mela, Prayag. Nasik also is one of the places you have Kumbh Mela. So, he sent him to Prayag for Kumbh Mela, that at least the dham, the holy place might influence him and he might not steal. So, over there, he sent him to associate with the sadhus over there. And, you know, the sage realized that anyways, sadhus do not have anything. So what will he steal out of them? So he went over there and he was living with these sadhus. And again, this titillation within him, you know, that this addiction that what can I do over here to steal? I don't find anything which I can steal over here. But still, I can't resist myself. I have to do something about. And he was feeling so restless even over there in Prayag, Kumbh Mela, amidst all these, you know, renowned sages, sadhus, which they had only one potli of some clothes and one kamandalu like that. So because of his addiction, what he did at night, he just mixed up their clothes. And early in the morning when he saw that everyone was confused, that where is my set of clothes gone, you know, and this someone else's set of clothes, and everyone was fighting, you know, because of that, that you stole my clothes, you did that because of this reason, you know, some years ago, you know, because I had given you these clothes and you were, you know, ungrateful, therefore you have done this today. And the thief was very satisfied. Finally, you know, I could do something to create some havoc, even amid sadhus. So, habits, the nature is like that. It's addictive. The moment the situation comes forth for that bad habit to get its satisfaction immediately. And I'm talking about situations which might come offhand without your notice, without your planning. But for a person who is very much deeply addicted in a bad habit, he creates the situation. He makes sure that the situations around me is always like one friend of mine. He paid extra money to one panwala to open his shop just next to, you know, his office, so that he doesn't have to move around here and there to get his cigarette. And because whenever he would come to the office, he would look at that panwala. So he would always feel that instigation that I should buy the cigarette for today, the cigarette pack. And because of which, you know, he was always into that bad habit of smoking, because he just kept the surroundings around him like that. Like one of our devotees was telling that in Mumbai, we have this President Hotel. It's a kind of a 3-star, 5-star, I guess, hotel. And, you know, big wealthy people go over there. Just a cup of tea would cost you, say, you know, 300, 400 rupees, just a cup of tea. So, people go to this President Hotel and they feel themselves, you know, that yes, just going inside the hotel, everyone should be watching me as I'm entering the hotel, whether I'm having anything or not, but at least people should watch that, wow, this person is entering President Hotel. So, it's a prestige issue to have something in President Hotel. So, next to that President Hotel is like, you know, what do you call that? Chhapri Chaiwala. You know, kind of a shack with just, you know, one chaiwala, you know, selling his cheap chai, say 1 rupee chai like that. So, there are regular customers for that chaiwala. And that chaiwala, whenever he has customers, you know, those regular customers. So, sometimes, you know, the big customers, they are going into the President Hotel. And the others, they are going to that chaiwala. They say, we are going to the Vice President Hotel. In fact, to such an extent that he wrote over there, you know, Vice President Hotel after some time. So, here you have the President Hotel and then there is the Vice President Hotel. So, whether it is President, whether it is Vice President or whether it is, you know, Deputy Vice President or Deputy Vice President, whatever, when it comes to habits, they are so addictive in nature that before we get them, they get us. And therefore it is said that habits, they are like cozy beds. Soft cozy beds. Easy to get in, very difficult to get out. Have you experienced that when you are dead tired and when you go on to just sleep and there is a nice cozy soft bed to sleep on, and when you have just gone to sleep, you're in the middle of your sleep and somebody wakes you up, tries to take you out of the bed, you know, it's the most horrible thing you might want to experience. So habits are like that. They are addictive in nature. And therefore, they have a stronger pull, such strong pull that it goes beyond logic and reasoning. You can't give any logic and reasoning for, you know, what you are doing, for, you know, in what way, what is the purpose behind it. It's like if somebody goes to ask, like two drunkards are going into a bar, and you know, somebody from say, what channel you have in Nasik, the local Govinda, okay, the Govinda channel. So Govinda channel guy goes there and two drunkards, you know, they are about to enjoy their party, and he goes and he inquires them, so can you give me some logical reasoning why you want to drink this today on a Saturday night? Do you think the drunkards will have some logic and reasoning that why they want to drink that particular liquor on that particular day in that particular fashion? Because it is so strong, the logic and reasoning fails in that. A person who is very much addictive. Now we have discussed this. Cigarette smoking is injurious to health. Of course, now the caption, they say that your cigarette smoking is injurious to my health. So if you feel like helping others, or if you are a kind of a social worker, then better don't smoke, because your smoking is becoming injurious to my health. And that's true. That's called the passive smoker. The passive smoker gets more affected than the active smoker, because he gets in both, you know, the one which is coming out from his mouth, you know, like chimney, and the other which is coming from the lighted cigarette butt. So he gets to get both inside his system. So another nature over here, we see that it is beyond logic and reasoning. And therefore, because we may go on point by point trying to explain some logic, unless you have some higher taste, this logic and reasoning, simply trying to work upon our habits, trying to give it some logic or some reasoning, will not help unless we substitute it with something higher. And this is a wonderful example. It has a kind of a gravity pull. Now, you must have heard of the Apollo 11 voyage, 1969, that supposed Apollo 11 voyage, which took off to the moon planet. And people were giving so many adjectives when they saw the Apollo 11 just blast off into the space. Incredible, fabulous, this is mind-boggling, bewildering to see first-time man heading towards moon. So over here, why we have taken this example of the voyage of Apollo 11. Apollo 11, the people who constructed Apollo 11, they further spoke about it, that the kind of energy which it took to take off from the gravity pull of the Earth planet, the Earth's gravity sphere, it was double the energy which Apollo 11 had to use, double the fuel, double the energy for Apollo 11 to take off or come out from the gravity pull of the Earth planet, then when it went into space afterwards, beyond the gravity pull of Earth. So, this word is a very significant word in terms of our habits also. That our habits are also like that. It has a gravity pull. Now, what is gravitational pull? It takes everything down. Whatever you try to throw up, it takes everything down. And we are not just talking of objects. We are talking of our consciousness. We try to be in good consciousness, but the surroundings and our bad habits, they gravitate us. They pull us down, always trying to pull us down. And then we experience that, how I want to be a good person, but these habits, they are pulling me down. Just like this Earth planet, which pulls everything down no matter how much you try to throw it up. So, the example of Apollo 11 is that we have to use double the energy. As it used double the energy, double the fuel to blast it off against the gravitational pull of this Earth planet. Similarly, our bad habits have that, you know, tendency to gravitate us. And we have to use double the energy, double the power within us to come over these bad habits. Right? In fact, it's like cultivating a field. Whether it is good or whether it is bad. And I'll get to this. Yeah, go ahead. So this wonderful quote, sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. This is how, it's like, if you know anything, we have some students from agriculture college here. We have some students from agriculture college. Or generally also farming, you must be knowing how farming, you know, the general farming procedures is that you have to plow the field. You have to make the field loosened so that you can sow the seed. And once you sow the seed, then you have to take care by watering it. You see, you have a seed. If you simply keep looking at the seed, nice seed. No, it should grow. And you keep it on your palm. Why it's not growing? I paid so much money for this seed. After all, it's a seed. It should grow. And what better place can it have than my palm? So, it requires a certain culture for that seed to grow. It requires fertile soil, it requires water, it requires cultivation. You know, so many other things are required for that seed to grow into, germinate into some sprouting plant and like that. So, habits are like that. Even bad habit, people, they cultivate it. They cultivate slowly and stealthily, steadily to get into a bad habit. When a smoker first time starts smoking, what happens? The lungs repel. I know one friend of mine, he started smoking and the only thing he was doing was he was just coughing it out. The lungs was rejecting. But then he was asking, how come everyone is enjoying, you know, when they are holding the cigarette stick, conveniently, without any coughing, you know, they keep on smoking, made for each other. You know, maybe this cigarette is not made for me. Why that cigarette and that person is made for each other? So he was wondering, and then an expert PhD in smoking came. And he said, it happens with everyone. Go on. Go on, my dear. Keep doing it again and again and again. And then I'll keep training you step by step. In what way you should smoke, how, at what time, how many. And then you'll come to this understanding, this mature understanding. And get this mature experience of smoking. So it's cultivation. People actually cultivate step by step, even into a bad habit. Like one time, a father, he called his three sons. And he told them, he told the first son, that you see out there in our courtyard, there is a small sapling of plant. So you pluck it and bring it for me. So he sent the first son to pluck out a small sapling of plant. Then he told to the second one that you see in the courtyard there is a bush and you also have to pluck it out and bring it for me. And then he told to the third son, you see that mango tree? Pluck it out and bring it. Now, the direction, the order was pluck it out and bring it for me. But for the first one, when he came, he just came in 2 minutes. It just took him 2 minutes to pluck out that small little sprouting plant. For the second one, it took him almost half the day. Because the bush was a little deep rooted and it was big in size. So in order to root it out, he had to use some energy and so much time. Then only he could root it out. But for the third one, it took him a week to do that to that tree. Why? Does anyone know? Why the third one took so much time? Because the roots were so deep. Habits are like that. In fact, old habits are like a big, huge tree which has been rooted so deeply in the soil that sometimes it might take not just weeks, it might take months, years to root it out from our life. But definitely, it's difficult, but it's not impossible. So we have to understand that just like we have cultivated some bad habits within us, we can similarly cultivate good habits within our system. Only thing required is a certain system, a certain channeling in our life. Go ahead. Now, this is a very significant term, conditioning. Conditioning is a kind of a synonym which is again used for any kind of habit, whether good or bad. So we become conditioned to a certain habit. Over here, just like you see, it is said that they are like mental magnets which draw you to certain things without your knowledge and consent. Now, all of you, you have come across a magnet in your life. Now, how does a magnet work? The magnet just comes closer to some iron filings or some iron object and nothing has to be done. Immediately, the iron filings get attracted to that magnet. Similarly, habits are like that. They are like, you know, they have some magnetic power within them that they keep pulling the particular sense object close to that bad habit. And if the sense object is not there, then that person is pulled towards that sense object. So that's how these habits they work. And it is without our knowledge and consent, by the way. It's not that the bad habits first consult you. So, okay, I'm going to engage in this activity. So, do I have your green signal? It's not that they first, you know, get some consent letter from us. And we see how our eyes, our nose, our tongue, our skin, our ears, these are, you know, the sense which engage in sense gratification into bad habits. And how they are actually pulled In fact, Arjuna also, he is speaking about this to Krishna, that athakena prayuktona prayuktoyam papam charati purusha, that from where do I get that pull wherein I am engaged in papa? Krishna is asking to Krishna this question. So we have to understand that the word conditioning is very much suited to this particular word habit which is there within us. Go ahead. Yeah, this is a very interesting example which I generally quote in terms of the conditioning which we are talking of. That this took place many years ago in Europe. The World Cup football was going on. And one particular European team was, you know, getting through, winning all through the various halves and reached the finals. And it was sure that it's going to win the finals also. But it so happened that just before the finals, a day before, the goalkeeper met with an accident and was bedridden. The goalkeeper of that particular team. So now the captain was so much disturbed and so much afraid that goalkeeper is one of the main players in this game of football. And he's bedridden now. My God, we're definitely going to lose. And the substitute which they had for the goalkeeper was not up to the mark. Because, you know, the captain, he had full assurance that the goalkeeper, nothing will happen to him and we'll go ahead win this particular tournament. So it happened, so he put the substitute now, no other alternative. So on the day, the final match, they were heading towards the stadium in a van, the whole team. So the van stopped, you know, at a stoplight, a red light. And then the captain was looking out and he saw that there was a watermelon seller who had a shop of obviously watermelons. And a very interesting sight the captain of this team saw, that a big load of watermelon, truckload of watermelon had just arrived in front of the shop of this watermelon seller. And the guy on the truck was unloading the watermelons. And he was throwing it at, you know, the shopkeeper who was standing at his shop. So there was a distance of like, you know, 5 feet from the truck and the shop and the shopkeeper. So the guy on the truck was just randomly throwing all these watermelons. And this person, the shopkeeper, was without any mistake, without any miss, he was holding each of these watermelons with such precision and perfection. He was not even looking up. He was so good at that, holding the watermelons. So the captain thought, he is the best person as a goalkeeper. Because what he is doing is what a goalkeeper is supposed to do. And in fact, he is better than our previous goalkeeper. Good that he was met with an accident and whatever, bedridden and like that. So he went to this watermelon seller and told that, you know, I'll pay you $1,000. You have to just do what you are doing. He said, what do you mean? Just do what I am doing. You'll pay $1,000 for that. So I am doing right now. Pay. He said, no, not here. You have to do the same thing what you are doing. Football field. So he was taken to the football field and he was positioned in front of the goal post. And he was told, see, the watermelon is spherical. You see that, you know, that ball thing, that is also spherical. Watermelon is of different color. This is white in color. Just consider this as a watermelon. And he was looking at, you know, why are they kicking? If it's a watermelon, why are they kicking? Watermelon, you know, I can sell it and I can make so much money. See, I am giving you $1,000. You don't have to kick it. You have to hold it. Okay, your job, you have to hold that. So he said, okay. So he was allured by the $1,000 and he had to just hold it. So, okay. So, you know, the match went on and it was like towards the end, you know, the tie break thing was going on. And this team, they were supposed to protect, just one goal, they were ahead of one goal from the opponent's team, and they were supposed to protect one goal, the time was just about to come to an end, and they would be winning the finals. So the opponent team, they came with the ball, and like four people with the ball, and they were just close to the goalkeeper. And now, of course, the captain, he had full faith in this new goalkeeper, because he had seen him doing that thing so wonderfully perfectly that he had no doubts that he would miss the ball. So he didn't work hard, let the four people go with the ball, and you know, they went close to the goal post, and one of them, you know, kicked it and just went flying. And he was told that, just think, that's the watermelon coming to you. So he thought, wow, watermelon, white watermelon, now coming to me. Now, what he did was exactly what he used to do in the shop. In his shop, he held the ball, and everyone knew that yes, that he has saved us, and everyone hip hip hooray like that. And what he did next was, because that was his habit, he just threw the ball in the goalpost. Because he was habituated to do that. Because he was habituated, yes, to hold the ball also with that perfection. But the next habit which he had was to throw it down into his shop. And then he didn't realize that, you know, the captain didn't realize actually, to warn him that that thing you should not be doing. And even if he would have warned him, because he was habituated to that, he would have eventually anyways done it. So this is how any bad habit within us, it works. That is how the conditionings within us, they work. That yes, we may go on with so many nice things going on, like, you know, holding that ball with so much precision, but maybe the last moment, because of some silly bad habit, we might miss the whole show, the whole game. And also, there is this example of this Russian scientist. His name was Pavlov. This Russian scientist, he experimented something on his pet dog. So every day, this Pavlov, he would feed his dog with some dog cereal. Noon, 12 o'clock, lunchtime for the dog. So he would, you know, feed this dog with that dog cereal. And the way he would feed was, first he would ring a bell. So 12 o'clock, ringing bell, and the dog would come out, and the bowl of cereal, dog cereal, would be ready, and he would have it. So this Pavlov, he wanted to experiment now on the dog, in terms of what we are discussing now, conditioning. That how the dog was conditioned actually on that particular, or that particular time. First the time, and the second was ringing of the bell. So what Pavlov did, one day he just kept empty bowl, and 12 o'clock he rang the bell. So the dog came, and the dog started salivating. You know, when some very good preparation is just in front of you, what do you call in Nasik language? You understood. So, the dog would every day at 12 o'clock would start salivating upon just the fact that he's going to enjoy that nice cereal. But on this day, when there was no cereal in the bowl, the dog came hearing the bell, and on his way he started salivating. And just in front of the bowl also, empty bowl, he started salivating. And the scientists then came to the conclusion that this is how our conditionings work. That our conditionings are not just associated with the particular object which we want to enjoy, or the habit which is it in, but actually the circumstances around also. Just like I've seen, you know, this Chinese restaurant. You know, they have a certain font in which they write. Some dragon is coming out. And you know, it's always red background. and the Chinese way of writing is, you know, different, you know. So I've seen that many times when you see, you know, a certain, say, that thela also nowadays they have, the Chinese thela, there also they write in the same font, the Chinese font. So if it is written like that, immediately, because of our conditioning, what happens to a person who is fond of Chinese food? Some Chinese noodles or something like that is available here. Even though nothing might be there. But just the circumstance, the situation, the appearance of it gives rise to so many different feelings within us. So, just like our body also. Our body, it gets accustomed to whatever we make it acclimatized to. Generally now, we see that noon time, in our case also, we have our food, say 12:30, 1 o'clock or like that. So that time, automatically the body starts to demand, the mind starts to think of lunch, starts to think of eating something, dinner time. I guess many of you might be thinking right now that this guy, you know, is going on with his habit thing. You know, it was announced there is prasadam and we had last time also. And you know, in our case also the ring is going on. And maybe some of you might be salivating because the kitchen is just behind you. So, you know, our conditionings are like that. You know, so this Russian scientist, he experimented on his dog and he came to the conclusion that this is how, even if the circumstances are not present, but when we get habituated to a certain circumstance, in a certain way, we speak or we eat or we dress, you know, we try to behave in that habituated way. Go ahead. And therefore, it is said that little actions, you know, they give the enslaving after effect. The example of a drunkard. See, when a drunkard starts drinking, he begins with, you know, just one peg. And that one peg appears, that one peg appears to be like so powerful. And then he keeps adding some water in it and he just wants to make sure that I'll still be in this body. After having that one peg, I'll still be in this body. So he tries to just begin with small amounts. And then when he becomes so much habituated to that activity of drinking, and then he can go on and on and on, not just with one peg. One peg would be, one peg? You're just sampling over me. One peg is like, one time, in a family, the wife was very much troubled by the husband's this drinking habit. So one day, what happened? The wife, early in the morning as she was cooking the breakfast, she was reading the newspaper. And she saw a big article in newspaper that day, which spoke all, you know, about the ill effects of drinking liquor. And it was all scientific, logical. And she said, my God, this article, you know, if my husband reads, that's it. It's going to convince my husband. So what she did on the breakfast table, before the breakfast, she kept that page open of that newspaper article. So the husband came, and the husband, you know, he just sat on the chair and he saw ill effects of drinking liquor. Immediately his eyes caught on that. And the wife was observing from the kitchen that whether he is reading that article or whether, you know, after seeing that particular heading, ill effects of drinking liquor, he might just tear away that page or go to the next page. But the wife saw that, leaving everything aside, he was very intently reading that article, ill effects of drinking liquor, and he was going line by line and very closely he was reading it, minutely observing each and every point within that article. And the wife was feeling that, my God, finally, thanks, you know, I'll really pay whatever this news, you know, editor might have edited this article or put this article, I pay so much money to this person. And then, after reading the whole article, he closed the newspaper and then he shouted out, I am giving up. Today I am giving up. And the wife became so happy. I knew definitely, my dear honey, that you are going to give up because it was so convincing. He said, what? That article was so convincing. You know, definitely you must have been convinced now that you will give up liquor. I didn't mention that. When I said I am giving up, I said I will give up reading newspapers from now on. So a drunkard or anyone who is addicted to anything. So when we talk of, say, intoxication, when we talk of addiction, we generally relate it to, you know, someone smoking or drug addict or someone who is into drinking and all that. But actually, intoxication means anything which is detrimental to our progress in this human form of life and which acts as a toxin. What a toxin means? Poison. Toxin means poison. So anything which acts as poisonous to our progress in this human form of life is actually we are taking in that toxin. So intoxication. And it could be anything depending on individual cases. Their addiction could be of anything. Go ahead. And therefore, good conditioning, on the other hand, they save our time, whereas bad habits, they squander our time. How much time people, they waste actually when they are into some bad habit. You know, when I have seen, you know, in defense, when people are into these smoking and drinking habits, hours and hours they are just sitting there. And because, you know, after 2-3 pegs are gone in your system, then first of all, you do not know, even if you look at the watch, you know, every hand appears to be four hands. You know, the minute hand, the second hand. So you can't recognize how much time has gone by and how much money one has expended on it. But as far as good conditioning, just like, let us take for example some simple things as far as good conditioning and how it saves our time. Just like we learned how to walk in our life. Now all of us, we know how to walk. But at one point of time, when we were infant babies, it took a long time for us to just take the first step. You see small babies, you know, when they're just 11 months old or, you know, 12 months old, just a year old, the infant baby just tries to take one step, sometimes trips and falls. And, you know, everyone encourages, okay, get up, get up. Hey, one took one step. That one step is taken as, you know, a leap kind of thing, a stride. Now, all of us, we learnt our walking like that. Now imagine if every day in the morning you get up and you have to again relearn how to walk. How will you feel? You are on your bed and early in the morning, ah, my God, again I have to walk. I forgot how to walk. Again you have to learn every day how to walk. Can you imagine how much time will it take for everyone if everyone has to learn every day to walk or to speak? Early in the morning you get up and you forgot your mother tongue. You forgot the language which you know. And you think, oh my God, how am I going to speak now? I have to learn again, you know, A, E, like that. Every day if you have to learn like that. Now how much time you are saving now because of a good conditioning of simple things like walking or speaking, you know. But on the other hand, bad habits, they take away so much of our valuable time that we do not even realize that what to speak of, you know, in a day, so many moments, but so many days and so many weeks and so many months and so many years we waste in this human form of life just because of some bad conditionings. Go ahead. Now, here is something very significant, that habits which are in relation with our conscious and subconscious mind. See, we have physical conditionings which we are very much conditioned to, We like to eat a certain thing. We like to see a certain thing. We like to smell a certain thing. So physically, these senses, they demand so many gratifications. But then we have to also understand that our mind is, which is more powerful than the physical body. It is the mind which is very much conditioned to so many bad habits, because of which we want to enjoy something and we feel that this is, will be good because it gives me pleasure. So let us try to understand these habits in terms of our mind. Yeah, go ahead. So mind has now two sections. One is conscious mind and the other is the subconscious. Now what is the conscious mind? Just like all of you, hopefully your mind is with me trying to focus on what I am saying. So the conscious mind, what it does is, go to the next one. It has the ability to think and can accept and reject both. That is the ability of the conscious mind. Yes, when our conscious mind is working, we can accept things, and we do accept things which the mind likes. And we reject things which the mind dislikes. You know, as soon as, you know, my favorite program goes on the TV, wow, immediately I accept all my senses, you know, I become focused. All the focus, like Arjuna focused on the bird, I just focus on the TV program. All my senses, my eyes, my ears, you know, and my being, everything is over there. And as soon as, you know, there's some channel is changed, immediately the same mind rejects the same TV. Switch it off. That's how the mind works. The same object, the same time, the mind accepts and the mind rejects. That's the conscious mind. Now the subconscious mind, which is, you know, simply accepting what the conscious mind is accepting. And it just gets stored up in the subconscious mind. And it is actually the subconscious mind which turns it into a habit. So people, they don't realize, you know, that sometimes, you know, you have seen, I've seen in my travels, and this is a very significant experience, that when your conscious mind allows your senses to interact with the sense object in a certain way, the subconscious mind keeps storing it. It's like the hard disk. The subconscious mind is like the hard disk, and the capacity is millions of GB. And it keeps storing so many impressions. So in my travels, I've seen, you know, whenever a sense object is passing by, you know, like maybe some beautiful billboard or some restaurant or a beautiful opposite sex, immediately, without even conscious efforts, the eyes, they move towards sometimes 360 degrees. And then somebody realizes, oh my God, you know, I'm supposed to walk ahead. So that's how, you know, the subconscious mind works. Okay, I want to put a riddle in front of you. And let's see, you know, how we try to locate ourselves in this. So there is a situation wherein the father and the son, they were going in a car, and the car met with a brutal accident in which the father somehow survived, and the father took the son to the hospital, and there was the situation where immediate surgery was to be performed, and the surgeon was immediately called, and the surgeon looked at the patient and said that I cannot perform this surgery because it's my son. So how can you? Yes, because the mother was a surgeon. See, immediately when the surgeon word comes, we think surgeon means it has to be male. The subconscious mind has got this stored in it, that mother, surgeon means it has to be male. But over here, if the surgeon is a female and the mother, immediately there is a confusion. Come on, what's happening? The father is already bringing, and the surgeon is saying that I cannot perform surgery because it's my son. Like, it happened that there was a black man, you know, a black African, who was standing next to a black pole. And he was wearing a black dress with a black tie with black goggles. And there was a black car coming. And that black car had the driver who was also wearing black goggles. And the black car was speeding very fast against this black man. And there were no headlights on this car. And it was raining heavily. And as this black car with that driver wearing black goggles with no headlights on a rainy day was heading fast towards this black man wearing black dress, black tie, black goggles, black shoes, black socks, everything black. You know, the car came heading speeding, but just when the car was about to hit, the car stopped. Why? It was daytime. So what happens, you know, in our subconscious mind, you know, whenever black, no headlights, rainy day, you know, black everything, which means it has to be night. So this is how our subconscious mind, it works. It simply accepts and then it starts reciprocating with the sense objects according to whatever it has been fed with. And the subconscious mind is fed only when the conscious mind opens the door. Then only the subconscious mind can be fed with something. And therefore, this wonderful example is given. This is not the black automobile you are talking of. this example of the automobile and the driver. So you have the automobile which can be compared to the subconscious mind. But that subconscious mind or that automobile can be driven only when there is a driver inside. So the driver is a conscious mind which is more important over the automobile. So therefore we have to first of all take care of our conscious mind, that with this conscious mind, what are we accepting within our system? What are we looking at? What are we tasting? What are we hearing? All these senses, how are we interacting? And the subconscious mind, how is it allowing it to get into my subconscious system? Because many times you may see something unconsciously. Say, I know of one person. This was one of our members from ISKCON who had come from UK. And he was facing a serious problem because he couldn't sleep at night. Practically every other day he would get a very horrific dream, kind of a nightmare, when he would get up in the middle of the night. In fact, he was once sleeping next to me and he got up with such horror on his face. I also woke up, that what happened? So he was facing this problem. He couldn't sleep at night and he was taken to one homeopathic doctor in Bombay, and that doctor asked the first question, did you see any horror movie like that, what you experience in your dreams practically every other day? And he said, yes, when he was 15 years old, that time now he's 30 years old. When he was 15 years old, he saw one horror movie. And in that horror movie, what he saw, you know, some insects crawling on people's body and killing them. So that same scene, 15 years down the line, his conscious mind registered in the subconscious mind. And at night, in his dreams, the subconscious mind would show that horror movie. So, whatever our senses are taking in. Now, sometimes I see people pay more money to go and watch a horror movie. Bhoot, something regarding bhoot, and you know, they go and they pay so much money. And sometimes when some horrific scene comes, they close their eyes. They pay all the money to go there and close their eyes. And you know, sometimes when they come out from the theaters, after a very, very horrific movie, when they come out from the theaters and when they go to sleep at night, you know, a small rustle in the curtain. It has come maybe. And immediately, the subconscious mind starts to fantasize about the same ghost or whatever horrific thing that person might have seen. And you might not realize that, like this person, it went on for 15 years and still he is facing that problem, that he is not able to come over those nightmares, that what he watched 15 years ago. So be careful with what you do with your eyes. So this is the example of how we have to actually give more importance to the driver than the automobile, than the driver who should be driving the correct direction, the right direction, the automobile, which means the subconscious mind. Go ahead. Yeah. So you have another example of the garden and the gardener. So you may have a garden, but it all depends on the gardener, how the gardener works upon that garden. If the gardener is inattentive, then all you may see the weeds coming, growing in that garden. If this gardener is attentive, then you can see blossoms and roses and nice things blooming in that garden. Now, yeah, go ahead. Now, as far as our mind and our subconscious mind is concerned, there are three things over here. Yes, you have the stimulus. Stop. You have the stimulus. Stimulus means that whenever you come across a certain situation, immediately there is a stimulus created. You are passing on the road and you are passing by your favorite restaurant. And your favorite delicacy is being cooked inside. And you know, sometimes they cook it outside just to instigate you more. You know, and like I've seen, you know, in Mumbai, they have these outlets outside wherein they make they present it in such a fascinating way that, you know, people, you know, as they are walking, you know, they feel first glance, you know, they give the first glance. And then they walk two steps, again they see, you know, how is he cooking? And then again three steps, again, nicely cooking. And then about turn, go in the restaurant. So, when you are experienced with that kind of situation, there is a stimulus created. Okay, I want to eat my favorite restaurant. And you know, and you start justifying that, you know, after all, it's my favorite delicacy and I have not had it since last 1 week. And, you know, after all, life is for enjoyment. And I have money also. And this is my age also. When I grow old, how can I enjoy? You know. And after all, I have to make business of that person also. So I should be charitable. So you start justifying so many things, you know. So the stimulus is created, and the next, after the stimulus is, you respond to it. So there is a stimulus, and you see there are so many stimuli created around you because of the media, because of the advertisements, because of so many different factors. Wherever you go, enjoy this, have this toothpaste, have this toothbrush, you know, use this soap, you will become, there was a soap in Mumbai, they advertised. Age control soap. That you know, put on this, you apply this soap and your age will be controlled. So no old people were using it. So you may, you know, there were so many presentations, you know, by material energy. Use this and you will be happy. Everything free, incoming, outgoing free. So, you know, I relate it to incoming means birth and outgoing is death. So incoming, outgoing, birth, death, free in this material world. So there are so many stimuluses, and then you have to respond to it depending on your condition, your habits. But then there is a catch in between. In between the stimulus and the response, there is freedom to choose. Yes, there might be so many stimuli around you and you may have the capacity to respond to it. But if you choose rightly, no, I am not going to enjoy. Just like sometimes, you know, when some students, they start to accept this process of chanting Hare Krishna and following the principles, you know. So sometimes they are in a struggle phase of their sadhana bhakti, that they have to struggle with the material energy. Their material energy is bombarding, enjoy me, enjoy me. So there are different stages, you know. For a person who is totally into the stimulus respond activity going on, he says yes to material energy. Whenever the stimulus comes, yes, I am here for you. But then when he comes to some little good understanding, so now he doesn't have that courage to say no to that stimulus. So you know what he says? Wait. You just wait. I know it's not good, but I can't refuse you also. So you wait, and maybe, you know, after some time, when there is a good time, I can enjoy you. So from yes, it comes to wait. And for a person who is very strong in his intelligence, will say no. A strong no. So we have to use our freedom in such a way that whenever the stimulus which is not good for us, not healthy for us, we are attacked by it, we have to say no to it. And for that we have to use our intelligence. Intelligence over our mind. And mostly over our conscious mind. Yeah, go ahead. Now, there are people in category of the kind of mindset they have. So there are two kinds of people. Go ahead. There are the reactive people and they are the proactive people. Now, who is a reactive person? A reactive person is that he just waits for things to happen. And then finally when this thing happens, you know, then he, oh my God, why did this happen to me? Just like, you know, if I've kept a glass of water on this particular desk, and if start moving that glass of water towards the corner, so a reactive person will observe. You know, and then when that glass of water falls down, so a reactive person will react after the activity. And a proactive person, when the glass is coming, the proactive person will immediately say, oh, it's going to fall down, protect it, put it behind. That's a proactive person. So, you know, a reactive person is like a can of soda. You shake a little bit, everything comes out. That's a reactive person. And a proactive person is like pure bisleri water. No matter how much you shake, no fizz is going to come because it's pure water. So, one has to become proactive in one's life. Beforehand, one should have this knowledge that if I get into this bad habit, what will be the consequences, the repercussions? Not that we become just reactive. After the whole thing is over, oh my God, only if I would have not associated with that person. Only if I would have not smoked that cigarette. Only if I would have not gone to that bar. Only if I would have not seen that or done that. So we should be proactive in our life beforehand. Understand. Go ahead. Now, as far as these personalities are concerned, as far as the reactive people, they are often affected by the physical environment. When everything, just like a good seminar on habits is going on. Yes, definitely. I am going to take the resolution. Now, December is coming. And I am going to take my resolutions that I am going to stop all of this. And 1st January onwards till the whole year or maybe 10 years or 15 years, I am going to have this resolution. And then you just see 5th January, 6th January, 10th January, all resolutions turn into dissolutions. So, reactive people, they are very much affected by the physical environment. But as far as the proactive are concerned, they recognize their responsibility. It's a very good word, responsibility. How many times we take responsibility of our life? Generally we think, I have to just live my life, you know, and enjoy, eat, drink and be merry. Who cares about responsibility? This is, you know, when I am in my office, then maybe I have to take some responsibility. But we are talking of responsibility of our life. And it's a very good word actually. This word responsibility. If you break this word, it turns into our ability to respond. Now, we discussed about that, stimulus and response. So we have to develop a certain ability by which we can respond to certain activities and situations in a way by which we become disciplined, we become regulated, we become proactive. So a proactive person is a person who is responsible, and a reactive person is a person who is irresponsible. And over here you see another difference. Yes, go to the next one. Yeah. That a proactive person, he is actually driven by values, carefully thoughts internalized. He lives on values. But as far as a reactive person, therefore the term is, you have a fair weather person and you have an all weather person. When the weather is fair, okay, everything is nice. I am nice, you are nice, because the weather is nice. He is called the fair weather person. But a all weather person is the proactive person, whatever the weather might be. But I carry my own weather. So a proactive person is not influenced by others. He carries his own personality, his own weather wherever he goes. So we have to actually become that kind of proactive person, that we carry our weather wherever we go. Not that we get influenced by this actor or that celebrity or that person. Because, you know, in this particular film, this actor, he's smoking a cigarette upside down. So I should also smoke a cigarette like that. Why? Because then I can become famous like that particular actor. Or I look cool like that particular actor. So that is a reactive person who is simply driven by feelings, circumstances, conditions and environment. Go ahead. And therefore, these two wonderful quotes I thought of. No one can hurt you without your own consent. You can't blame anyone else or circumstances that because of this person I was in a bad habit. Because of that circumstance, you know, because of that TV program, because, you know, that particular movie which I thought. It's all because of we opening the doors of our conscious mind. And as here, Mahatma Gandhi also said, they can't take away our self-respect unless we give it to them. Go ahead. Now, let's go into the causes. Yeah, the first is free choice. Because all of us, we have a free choice, we misuse so many times that free choice and we get into a bad habit because of misuse of free choice. The second cause is because of prenatal habits. When we talk of prenatal habits, we are talking of the habits which we carry from our previous lives. There are certain impressions of some habits, good or bad, which we carry from our previous lives. That's called the prenatal habits. And sometimes we do not even recognize that how I'm getting involved into a certain kind of habit in this life. It's because of the carry forward from the previous life. And of course, the postnatal habits that we become habituated after we take birth into so many habits, either good or bad. Yeah. This is very important. One of the causes for we getting into any bad habit is that we resist to change. And I have some very interesting excuses. Whenever we want to do something good or somebody advises us to do something good, these are some of the patent excuses which we give. What is the first excuse? I have always done it that way. And which is that way? My way. That is the first excuse which you give. I have always done it my way. The second is, I have never done it this way, which means your way. This is the second excuse which we give. And the third is, that's not my job, by the way. And the fourth is, I am too busy after all. You expect me, you know, to change and do so many things in order to bring about that change. I am too busy. So many things are happening. I am a busy man. I am a businessman. So, I am too busy. And then finally, I don't think it will make any difference whatsoever, even if I adopt in my life. So these are the patent excuses which our nasty mind gives whenever we want to change over into a good person or from bad habit to a good habit. Go ahead. And some more causes. This is in fact one of the most important causes. The enjoyment factor. And why? Because we do things either to avoid pain or to gain pleasure. Any activity, we are trying to just find out either this activity should reduce my pain or this activity should increase my pleasure. So therefore I say that in this material world, most of the time, we are like, you know, spending our time in a waiting room. Like in a railway station, you have a waiting room. So you have people waiting over there. Some people are waiting for the train to come. And some people, they are waiting that the train is late, you know, for the train to leave. So we in our life also, we are waiting for miseries to go away in our life. And we are waiting for pleasures to come. So practically, our whole life is like waiting in a waiting room. For pleasures to come, for miseries to go away. So this enjoyment factor is a very important cause for getting into a bad habit. Because people enjoy bad habits, therefore, you know, you go ahead or somebody goes ahead into that bad habit. And therefore, you know, they have these phrases written on their t-shirts which I see in Mumbai. Just do it. Because, just go ahead, do it. Why? Because you like it. And recently I saw one t-shirt which said, just did it. So till now, they had, you know, just do it, and now they have advanced. Just did it. So, this is a very important factor. Next, we have a lack of desire to change. To, you know, come out from our comfort zone into that courage zone. To change our life. To change our bad habits. We don't have that, you know, intense desire to make that happen. And therefore, these are some of the things. Lack of desire to change, lack of discipline to change, lack of belief that they can be changed, and lack of awareness for the need to change. So we have lack of all these things because of which. So what we have to do in order to change into a good habit, we have to take off all the lack. We have to have a desire to change, we have to have discipline to change, we have to have that belief that yes, I can change. And ultimately, we have to have that awareness, that knowledge of how to bring about that change. Now, some steps, some easy steps to be taken. We'll conclude with that. That what are the steps to be taken in order to change from bad to good habits? First is habit modification. That we have to start modifying our habits on a very micro level. Micro level means small changes we have to make. And small changes actually, they result in good and better destinations if you make a small change right now. Just like the example of a plane is given, that a plane from Israel, when it takes off, so everything is so predetermined, the degree, the longitude and the latitude on which it's going to fly. It's so predetermined that one degree of change in longitude, the plane which has taken off from Israel, one change in one degree might lead that airplane to land somewhere in Europe when it was supposed to land somewhere in Asia. Just one degree of change. Like in our defense, we were taught that when you are shooting with a revolver and when you are aiming at, you know, the bullseye, you know, the target. So when you are aiming, if you are, you know, this barrel is a little bit deflected, then what happens is the trajectory of that bullet will take that bullet to such an unknown destination that even if you have thousands of bullseye put together, it might not even reach somewhere close to it. And you might feel, my God, it was a little change and the bullet went so far away. That is how little changes can give such tremendous impact in our life. So sometimes, you know, if you are told to do a macro change in your life, macro change means big change. Okay, you know, from if you have a habit of getting up 8 o'clock in the morning, okay, from tomorrow onwards you have to get up 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. or p.m.? So, it becomes like, too much, my God, forget it. But if there is a micro change told to you to do, that okay, if you have a habit of getting 8 o'clock in the morning, try tomorrow getting up 7:45. 15 minutes, okay, no problem. Then, you know, 1 week you practice 15 minutes getting up early than before. Then 15 minutes more, like that. So habit modification is a very effective tool to come over a bad habit. Small, but steady changes. Go ahead. And this is a very wonderful method. It's called the sustain and abstain method. Just like, you know, a tiger, how a tiger is tamed in a circus. Now a ferocious tiger, when it's initially put in the cage, starts roaring like any top of the voice. But the ringmaster for 1 week doesn't even look at the tiger. And the tiger is roaring. And because no food given and so much roaring going on, no input, so much output. So what the tiger, after 1 week, you know, he just is seen sitting in the corner. You know, even if, you know, the ringmaster goes and slaps the tiger, the tiger now has no strength at all. So that is called the abstain method. That the ringmaster abstains from the tiger, and the tiger, you know, initially is roaring like any. So similarly, our bad habits are like ferocious tigers. When you abstain from bad habits, initially they might roar like a tiger. But what you have to do? Just neglect. And the ringmaster, after that 1 week, comes with some little meat, loaf of meat, and then shows to the tiger, and the tiger sees some hopes. And the ringmaster says, jump from the ring, indicates. And the tiger jumps from the ring and gets that whatever food. So that's how the tiger is tamed, a ferocious animal like that. Similarly, our bad habits are more ferocious than any ferocious animal. So we have to tame it with this method of sustain and abstain method. And therefore, over here, as it is said, starve your bad habits by lack of attention. As the ringmaster pays no attention to that ferocious tiger initially. And feed your good habits through introspection and self-correction. So one has to introspect and one has to give a self-correction, always correcting oneself. We are very good at finding faults in others. You know that next door person ran away with someone. You know what happened? He failed. You know what happened? He did that. So we have to take that finger and point at ourselves. We have to become a fault finder of ourselves. And then list down all the faults which we have and try to introspect and self-correct ourselves. And therefore, we have to stay away from tempting environment and people. See, many times we may have the desire, but we again bump into those environments and people who may tempt us into bad habits. Like, for example, a drunkard who is trying to leave his drinking. Like one time, one person, he went to a bar, and over there he ordered for 3 glasses of beer. So 3 glasses of beer, and he was simultaneously trying to drink from 3 glasses. And the bartender, he was very surprised that, you know, why you are trying to, you know, drink from 3 glasses. So he said, you see, we are 3 brothers. And we 3 love to drink. So therefore, you know, I am drinking on behalf of the other 2 also. So, they are, you know, somewhere in some corner of this planet, the other one is in this corner of the planet. So I'm just feeling so much about them. So therefore, you know, in remembrance of the other two brothers, I'm having the other two beer glasses. So after a week, then he orders for only two. And the bartender, he becomes very sad. He comes, I'm very sorry that you must have lost one of your brothers. You are only ordering for two glasses. No. I have given up drinking. So I'm only drinking for those two. So my glasses, I'm not taken for me. But these two are for those two. So, this is how, you know, when you are surrounded with tempting circumstances and tempting people, imagine a drunkard entering into a bar. He is not going to chant Hare Krishna sitting over there. He is going to drink. So we have to physically stay away from tempting circumstances and those people whom we know. Yes, this person who instigates me always into bad activities and dangerous zones, I am going to stay away physically. So out of sight, out of mind. And substitution method. This substitution method is very interesting. Because unless you substitute your bad habits with something good, you cannot win over those bad habits. And therefore, it is said that habits can't be removed. They can only be replaced. So yes, if somebody is into this bad habit of getting into some intoxication or so many other bad habits, so that can be replaced with positive things. Just like over here now, we'll be having dancing kirtan. So one thing is, you know, after this lecture, there'll be dancing kirtan. So, you know, somebody might enjoy dancing in a discotheque. And over there, you know, with, you know, dim lights and mean people looking, and the music is also such that it put you in lower modes. So the same proclivity to dance and to sing, you can dovetail in the service of something so sublime as the Supreme Lord. So this is called the substitution method, that anything which is bad can be replaced with something good. And therefore, we have to undergo a deprogramming session for our subconscious mind. Yes, go ahead. And I gave a very wonderful example in this regard of riding a bicycle. Now, over here, all of you know how to ride a bicycle now? Now, initially, in my case, when I wanted to learn how to ride a bicycle, I thought, riding a bicycle, you know, you just sit on the bicycle, start pedaling, and it'll go. And I thought that it's so easy. So, that first stage in riding the bicycle is called unconscious incompetence. That we are incompetent, but we are unconscious of it. We think that we know how to ride a bicycle. So it happened with me. The first time, I didn't take help of anyone. I just sat on the bicycle and I started pedaling. And guess what happened? I pedaled and then I was in the hospital. Like, you know, in our childhood it was said that there was one guy who became so adept in riding the bicycle that we'll come to the fourth stage over there. So, okay, I'll speak about that when we come to the fourth stage. So from unconscious incompetence, we come to conscious incompetence. Then we come to know, we are conscious that I'm incompetent in riding a bicycle. So this is the second stage. And the third is, we become consciously competent. That now, yes, I have the consciousness that I'm competent. And the perfected stage in riding the bicycle is that we are so competent that we become unconscious about our competence. And we were told about this guy who was so competent, supposedly, in his riding of the bicycle that he was showing off to his father that he was riding the bicycle and he left off his legs from his pedals. And he said, "Father, no legs." You know? And father was a little worried. And then the cycle was still in the momentum and he left the hands from the handle. And he said, "Daddy, no hands." And guess what? After some time, he said, "Daddy, no teeth." So sometimes you know that unconscious competence might lead to no hands, no legs and no teeth also. Vedanta. So, we have to deprogram our subconscious mind in such a way that we, from unconscious incompetence, we come to the stage of unconscious competence. And therefore, we have to change by conscious efforts, not by evolution. Sometimes we think, jab time aayega, tab main chhoot jayega ye sab, mere jeevan se. When time will come, everything will be gone. So we have to change by conscious efforts, not just by evolution. And over here, to conclude with, the last point over here is the most efficient way to destroy inner bad habit is by inner concentration. Because all these bad habits, they spring from our inner self, from the mind. So in order to give up the inner bad habit, we have to have the inner concentration. And therefore, we have to change our thoughts. And for that, you know, we have to change. The thoughts will change our words. The words will change our actions. And our actions will change our habit, which will later on become our character. So when we speak of inner concentration, we are speaking of something spiritual. Because everything, when we speak of bad habits in relation with the conscious or subconscious mind, it has to do with the material mind. So when you feed the material mind with something spiritual, some inner concentration, then that inner concentration will definitely help us out to come out from this material tabernacle. And to conclude with that, how even sometimes in spiritual life, sometimes our activity of inner concentration might become hackneyed. So I remember of this one story of one person who was a traveler, and he would travel from forest to forest, village to village. But he would travel by foot, so he was always facing problems of traveling by foot. So he really wanted some carriage, you know, which would help him travel. So one time he was passing through the forest and he happened to see a sage, a sadhu. So he approached the sadhu and asked that, "Can you benedict me with something which can help me in my travels?" So the sage, immediately by his mystic power, he brought in front of him a magical horse and told to this traveler, "So this magical horse can help you in your travels wherever you want to go." "Sir, how come it's a magical horse?" He said, "You have to just sit on this horse, and in order to make this horse run, you have to just say thank you. And when you say, in fact, you have to thank God, not just say thank you. So you have to say thank God. So when you say thank God, that is the ignition. The horse will start running. How to stop that? You just say, save me. When you say, save me, the horse will immediately stop over there." So now he understood. Two mantras I have to remember. Thank God, save me. Thank God, save me. So now he wanted to test it out. He sat on the horse. As soon as he sat on the horse, he chanted the first mantra. Thank God. And immediately the horse started galloping. Wow, this is wonderful. And he was feeling so elated. Now, you know, such fast pace I can travel. And he was like, thank God, really. And he was going on, thank God, thank God, thank God, like that. And you know, the horse was hearing that mantra. The horse was galloping faster as he was hearing all the time, thank God, thank God. He was galloping all the more faster. and the horse started galloping up a hill. He went up a hill and now he was realizing, my God, the horse is going up a hill. Oh, I forgot the other mantra. What is the other mantra? Thank God, God. What is the other mantra? And as he was going on, just with the first mantra, thank God, the horse was going so fast up the hill. And he realized the horse is going to reach the dead end of the cliff, where the cliff is going to meet with the deep valley. And the horse just reached the dead end and he was now not able to remember the second line, the second mantra which would stop the horse. And when the horse just reached the brink of the cliff, when it was about to jump into the cliff, in the valley, immediately, spontaneously, he just blurted out, save me! Which was the mantra actually. And immediately there was urgent brake, the horse stopped over there. And then he said, thank God. So many times, you know, our habits are like that. That even if we might want to do something for our inner concentration, because of our previous bad habits, something like that might come. When the time to say a certain thing, which we have to say, we do the wrong thing at that particular time. So therefore, to conclude with, the inner concentration which I recommend is to chant the holy names of the Supreme Lord. Just like, you know, you were all engaged before this lecture, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra which you see over here. Any bona fide names of God can be chanted. In fact, this is one of the most powerful mantras for this age of Kali Yuga, which can help us, you know, activate from within and just cleanse our heart from within. So that those bad habits, the traces of all the bad habits within the subconscious mind can be just purged out when we utter the holy names of the Supreme Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question pertaining to this lecture? So he can rise and ask his question.
If anyone has any question, you can just raise your hand. The mic will be passed to you. Whatever we discuss today or whatever you want to ask in terms of, say, spirituality and how to practice it as a youth within this material world, you can ask your question. Don't feel shy. You can feel free to ask any questions you might have so that we can try to answer. Anyone has any questions? Or everyone satisfied? Or, one time there was one person who was giving a discourse. And after the discourse, he asked for questions. Any questions? So one person, he raised the hand and said, sir, I had one question when your lecture was going on, but you answered it. And, you know, the person who was giving the lecture, he became very elated that, wow, my lecture was so good that even before he asked the question, I answered it. So he said, by the way, then what was your question? He said, my question was, when are you going to end? And you answered it by ending. So anyone has having that question, which I've already answered? So which means if no questions, which means all of you agree. Okay, you have a question.
How we can increase our inner concentration?
Good question. How can we increase our inner concentration? So just like, you know, I concluded with that inner concentration means chanting of the holy names of the Supreme Lord who is spiritual, of God. Now, whenever we are talking of concentration, we have to concentrate on something which is higher than us. We have to concentrate on something which is more purer than us. Just like if you want to clean this floor, you have to clean this floor with a cloth which is cleaner than this floor. If you try to clean this floor with a dirty cloth, you will make this floor more dirty. So similarly, when you want to clean your heart with all the bad habits, then you have to put a kind of a cleansing agent in your heart, which is more powerful or more purer, hundreds, millions and unlimited times more purer than our contaminated heart. And that is the holy name of the Supreme Lord. So when we chant and concentrate on the holy names of the Supreme Lord, that concentration on the holy name of the Supreme Lord will bring about the cleansing of the heart. And that chanting of the holy names can be done just like we are chanting together, and also like we chant on beads. So any religion one might be following, there is a process of chanting of the holy names. Even Jesus said, "Hallowed be thy name, thou art in heaven. O Father, give us this day our daily bread." So he told about, you know, the holy name which is to be chanted, and even they have rosaries on which they chant. We have, you know, our Tulsi Mala, which we chant on. So chanting is that concentration which we are talking about. But chanting the holy names of God, not anything else. Not that you take mala and you chant Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. You know, and you will get the same benefit of chanting Hare Krishna. No.
Hare Krishna, there is one question. One more question from backside. I just got the question. He said that good habits are very easy to give up, and bad habits are really very persistent. So it is very difficult to give up bad habits, and it is easy to give up good habits. So please clarify this point. The question came from
this backside. Is a good question, that whenever we want to give up any good habit, it's very easy to give up good habits. Like all of you who have, you know, experienced school days or in your college also. So when you sit in the classroom, it's very difficult to remain silent, you know, especially when the professor is not there. Now imagine the professor comes and the professor tells, talk, keep talking. How easy it is to give up that silence then? Professor has said, Sarkar Manya. It is licensed now. Okay, then to what extent everyone is going to start talking, murmuring, chit-chatting? So yes, why bad habits are so easy to adopt in our life and good habits so difficult to adopt and so easy to give up? Because of the enjoyment factor. You see? Because of the enjoyment factor. Now, just like many things we do in our life, which we know is not giving me enjoyment, which will not give me enjoyment right now, but still I will do because it is necessary. Like you going to college. How many of you, when you early in the morning get up, you feel blissful and ecstatic? Today also I have to go to college. You feel so happy about going to college. Now, why still you go to college? Because you know that by going to college, by studying those, you know, difficult books and those difficult theorems and chapters and subject matters, and that too then writing the difficult exams and the question papers, I'm going to get that piece of paper. What is that piece of paper? The degree. So I'm going to get that piece of paper, and that piece of paper is going to fetch me many pieces of paper. So therefore, that enjoyment which I'll get at the end makes me take up some good habit, some discipline. So therefore, why good habits are easy to give up? See, anyone will give up good habit only for taking up some bad habit. Not for any other reason. Just like somebody wants to kill the time or wants to watch a movie or TV program or do something like that, then he has to give up something good. He has to close the book, not study, or you know, not doing something good activity. Then only he can do that bad activity. So why? Because there is higher enjoyment involved in that. Now as a human being, we have to first understand that any enjoyment, our intelligence should decide and discriminate. Is it good or bad for me? Is it beneficial or is it dangerous for me? And then only you can come over that habit of giving up good habits so easily. By using our intelligence always. Is it beneficial or is it dangerous? That's how we can come over that habit of giving up so easily good habits. Any other questions? Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Can you have the mic? Over here.
Sir, from thousands of years, Bhagavad Gita has told us many good things and art of living. And Bhagavan Sri Krishna also says that I am father of all. That means all the animals, all the living entities, our brothers. Sir, why the people do believe in subcaste and other religions? And also another question is...
Why people believe what?
Caste and subcaste.
Caste.
Okay. And another question, why the people kills other animal for God?
Well, of course, it's not a question related to what we discussed today, but still, I will answer it. The question is that if Krishna is the father of everyone, or if God is the father of everyone, then why there is caste system? Now see, what is caste system? Caste system, what generally people in India especially know of, that he's a Brahmana, he's a Vaishya, he's a Shudra, he's a backward class, and you know this. Of course, nowadays people, they get more benefited if they are, you know, SC/ST. They get more reservations. So I know of people who might have been born in some high class, but they change it legally. I want to become BC, BT. What is that? BC and SC. SC/ST. Why? So many reservations I'll get. First of all, it is mentioned in the scriptures that in Kali Yuga, all of us, we are born Shudra. Kalau Shudra Sambhava. By birth, everyone is a Shudra. And Shudra is not a person, it's a quality. You are talking of quality. You may have somebody born in the Brahmin family, but if his activities are Shudra-like, that person is a Shudra actually. And if a person who might be born in a low family, but if that person's activities are Brahminical, then that person is actually on the platform of a Brahmin. And who is a Brahmin? A Brahmin is not just a person who has a surname of Sharma, Shukla, Chaturvedi, this Vedi, that Vedi. That person is not a Brahmin. A Brahmin is a person, Brahma Janati Iti Brahmana. One who knows Brahma, the Parabrahma, that person is a Brahmin. And one who has the activities like that. A simple example, that a person who is son of a high court judge. Just because I am son of high court judge, so I should be also high court judge. Will that be allowed? So similarly, just by being born in some family doesn't claim oneself. So it's not that God has created this caste. God has created the qualities, and people, they fit into these qualities according to their activities. So in the Gita, when it is mentioned, Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha, the Vibhajan is not Janma. Krishna is saying the Vibhajan is Guna and Karma. That is the Vibhajan done. So in Kali Yuga, of course, Janmana Jayate Shudra samskarat bhavet dvija. By janma we are all shudra, but by samskaras we can become dvija. Veda paatha bhavet vipra brahma janati iti brahmana. That is a brahmana. Not just someone who has just taken birth, has a 25 paisa thread. Anybody can put a 25 paisa thread and call oneself by a certain name. I think we are getting a little late right now. It's already 9:45. And I know your body might be demanding, you know, a big feast which we have arranged for you. So, all those questions which you might have, you can personally, I'll be just, you know, be with you individually, also collectively. You can ask your question, personally come to me and ask your questions. I really want to answer all of your questions right now from here. But I don't want to hold everyone else over here who have sincerely attended this program. I would like to thank them, acknowledge them for their patient hearing and attendance. And hopefully this session which you have heard today will bring about some change as far as your habits are concerned. So again, our next prerna will be on 23rd of the next month, 23rd of December, that's another Saturday, and the topic is search for happiness. So at this point I would like to end the question answer session, and whoever has questions, you can come up to me personally and ask these questions.
Hare Krishna.